This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. In about a month, you'll probably see your first piece of mail from the U.S. Census Bureau. You'll go online and provide all the requested information, and that's it. Pretty simple. If you can't get to it, though, they'll send reminders. They'll send paper questionnaires, too, since we don't all have computers. And then, if all else fails, the U.S. Census Bureau will send someone to your house. Getting everyone to participate is a big challenge. Today, we'll talk about the many reasons why. And if you have questions or comments on our show today, let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail. Call us at 866-476-3881. Just give us your name, where you're calling from, and a quick question or comment, and we'll do our best to get it into the conversation today. Again, that's 866-476-3881. Joining me now is Jill Carnell, Executive Director of the State Complete Count Committee. Thanks for coming in, Jill.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
So how exactly, the big question here, how does the census work? How are people counted?
So the Census Bureau is a federal part of an agency, the United States Commerce Department. And people are counted by receiving questionnaires in the mail by Census Bureau employees who are called enumerators. And the invitation to respond is attached to addresses. And so for those people who maybe live in what the Census Bureau would call group quarters, so a nursing home, a dormitory at a university, something like that, a prison, that invitation goes to the coordinator or the manager of that facility. And the postcard will come and it will say that you can answer the question for the people who live in your household with you. So if you have people who are staying with you, sometimes extended family, you might have a friend who's staying with you for a while. If they're coming to your house every day or your apartment or whatever, you should be counting those people as well. And so there'll be ways to do that. You can go online. You can answer the questions that way. You can answer with your smartphone. There's going to be an app that will be part of that. Or you can call a phone number, an 800 number, and talk to an enumerator. Or you can call and ask them to send you the form that you can then fill out the form and send it back in, kind of like our parents and our grandparents may remember doing that. And then if you don't answer or if you feel more comfortable with somebody coming out, you can always say, hey, I'd like you to send an enumerator to my house. And then that would happen.
So if you're looking for a cool line on your resume, you can say, I was an enumerator for the U.S. Census Bureau.
Like, what other place are you going to get to say you have that title? I can't think of any.
But as I understand it, it's been hard to find enumerators and other people to work for the census. Why is that?
Well, I think here in Indiana, we are enjoying, great economic times and we have a very low unemployment rate. So I think there aren't a whole lot of people looking for work right now. And I think that's the main reason, actually. But yes, they are looking for people and it's a great opportunity. It pays really well for even a part-time job. There's weekend and evening time available. So if you're somebody who, thinks you have a little bit of extra time, would like to get involved in this, which is like one of our biggest civic engagements, of anything you can do. It is a United States constitutional requirement to count all of the people. So if you want to be part of that, now is the time. Now is the time to check into the Census Bureau's website and to do that.
You mentioned it pays pretty well. They've kind of bumped that up. So there's sort of incentive there to get everything staffed. Is all of that done already or do you still need people?
Well, it is the Federal Census Bureau who's hiring people, not the state of Indiana.
Of course.
So I'm speaking a little bit just from the knowledge that I have from them. But yeah, they still need people. And I think that they are, responding to what they see. And if they need to, add some incentive to that in a financial way, I think they're doing that. So
why every 10 years? It seems arbitrary. It also seems to make sense. Why is it every 10 years?
Because the United States Constitution says every 10 years. So the founding fathers said every 10 years.
I thought that was the answer you were going to give. But why among people who deal with the census day in and day out, is there any sort of reasoning that is sort of I don't know, carried within those circles is why is it every 10 years? Is it an undertaking that would be much more difficult were it done more frequently?
I believe it would be. And also, you know, as we continue to make great improvements, you know, we have all these great demographers and geographers and, you know, all these like statistician people who have all kinds of great information, and they build they know what's happening. And also the Census Bureau every year does the American Community Survey. So that is sort of a snapshot of what they think is happening. So I think they can kind of build this picture of what they think is happening. And then every 10 years, it's sort of, in my estimation, like a check your work sort of thing where you actually go out to people and say, okay, we think we know who you are.
Yeah.
We think we know where you are. Who are you?
What would be the consequences, I guess, of it's in the Constitution, so we have to do it. What would be the consequences of not doing it at all?
Wow, you're asking a lawyer a question about not following the Constitution. That makes me uncomfortable.
I imagine it does. But I don't know. Is that something that you've ever entertained? Just what if we didn't do this? Like what would be at stake?
Well, I think we would probably, I mean, this is just me totally spitballing, but I think they would probably look at the data that they have from 10 years ago and they would try to extrapolate maybe. But by law, between Title 13 in the United States Code and the Constitution, those counts that they actually take are the official, certified numbers that the Census Bureau director provides to the federal and state governments. And so there's all kinds of laws that are attached to that. For instance, in the Indiana Code with reapportioning districts and that sort of thing for state house, the Indiana State Senate and the Indiana House of Representatives and all of those kinds of things, I think you'd have to probably go back to what was the actual certified the last time that happened. So right now we've got 2010 data, and we're getting ready to have 2020 data. But that's an interesting question.
just a curiosity, I suppose. Well, what about people who don't participate? That's a problem that we're going to kind of, I think, expand on for the rest of the hour.
Sure.
That seems to be a big problem, people not participating. And there are a number of reasons why. But what, I guess, from now, and we'll, again, keep addressing it the rest of the hour, what are the problems with that, people not participating?
Well, this is absolutely your directest way to say, I am here, and I am I count.
People like me are here.
People like me are here. I am here. And, it is the duty is to count the people who live here. So if you live here, you should raise your hand and say, this is me and this is who I am. So when we don't get everybody participating, we don't have a great idea about who is here. And so there may be, there could be communities that we have underrepresented. There could be communities that are overrepresented. There's all kinds of decisions that are made at, the state level, the local level, the federal government level about where services go and where money flows and all that kind of stuff. And then also, private industry also uses this data to decide, should we build this kind of store or should we have those kinds of amenities in a place? Is it someplace that, a building company wants to come in and build new houses or that sort of thing. So it's about a lot more than just the government providing services that we should be providing at, the government level. It's also used for all other kinds of.
Are there consequences, though, to refusing to participate?
Well, there is a law that says you're supposed to participate. I do not know of a situation where anybody has ever been fined or jailed or any of that. But I would just invite everybody to really think about, it is their civic duty and to come back to, especially Hoosiers. I think we have good intentions. We have good hearts. We try to do the right thing. And I think this is a situation where everybody can choose to do the right thing.
So what do we use the data for? Well, we've kind of gone through what we use the data for. We use it for urban planning, rural development and things like that. Mm-hmm. And what are some of the surprising things that we use that data for?
Well, we use it for roads. We use it for deciding where roads should go, how big roads should be, what kind of, should it be a stoplight? Should it be a roundabout? Should it be, whatever it is? We also use it to figure out how funding flows. So maybe for programming that you might not think of. So, some of the federal funds that come back to Indiana. So Medicaid, federal direct student loans, Medicare Part B, physician's fee schedule services, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, federal Pell Grant program, very low to moderate income housing loans, Title I grants to local education agencies, special education grants, and the National School Lunch Program.
So there's a lot.
Absolutely.
There's a lot that people take from census data that's very important.
Absolutely.
Now, part of your job as the Complete Count Committee at the Complete Count Committee is to partner with community organizations. What kinds of groups are you partnered with, and what does that do? What impact do they have?
Well, I can tell you our Lieutenant Governor, Suzanne Crouch, who is the chair of our Complete Count Committee, is constantly traveling around the state. So she talks to all different kinds of community groups. So think Kiwanis, Lions Clubs, that kind of thing. So she's constantly saying to them, hello, the census is coming. What are you doing here locally? Then we also have asked our judicial branch agencies to help us out with this, because, of course, the Supreme Court, through the trial courts are in all 92 counties. So we've asked them for their help. All state agencies also are participating. And then the legislative branch has also participated. And any statewide officials who wanted to add this messaging to their the services they provide have already been there or have already been invited to do that. Then we also tomorrow I'm talking at the Association of Indiana Counties is having their legislative conference. So we have really looked at, the counties, the AIM, which is the Accelerating Indiana's Municipalities. So we've gone to our partners at those kinds of agents, or those kinds of organizations to say this is important and this is coming. Then, of course, there are all kinds of groups that come to the State House every year who have a lot of influence in their communities. And we have asked the Government Affairs Society of Indiana, people that we know who are in the State House who are advocating on a daily basis, to go back to their constituents to say, what are you doing? So, for instance, the Indiana Retail Council has said, oh, our members are interested in helping with this. So I don't know exactly what that will look like, but I think it might be you might roll into a store and, you might notice that there's a census is coming, a message at the bottom of your receipt. You might also, the Apartment Association, for instance, has said they want to help with their members doing that too. So,
we're talking about the 2020 census with Jill Carnell, Executive Director of the State Complete Count Committee. And up next, we'll bring in some new voices to talk about the census and efforts to make sure everyone is counted. And if you have questions or concerns or comments about the process, let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail, which we can play on the show. 866-476-3881. That's 866-476-3881. I'm Matt Pelser. We're back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Today we're talking about the 2020 census and some of the state and city level efforts to make sure everyone gets counted. As always, we would love your questions and comments on the topic. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or leave us a voicemail, including your first name and where you're calling from, 866-476-3881. That's 866-476-3881. In the studio, we're joined again by Jill Carnell, Executive Director of the State Complete Count Committee, and joining us now, three guests from Indianapolis. Andrea Watts is Chief Communications Officer for the Indianapolis Department of Metropolitan Development. Thanks, Andrea.
Thank you.
Miriam Acevedo Davis is President and CEO of La Plaza. Miriam, welcome.
Thank you.
Tony Mason is President and CEO of the Indianapolis Urban League. Thanks, Tony.
Thank you.
Andrea, let's first explain what the Count Me Indy campaign is.
Yes, so Count Me Indy is the city's big push to encourage residents to self-respond. So we have a couple different goals, but it's really to maximize the self-response rate of the residents and kind of overcome any challenges associated with knowledge, vulnerability, and access. We've got a couple different committees and tactical-based subcommittees, so I'll kind of just go over that. I'm excited today to be joined by representatives from La Plaza and the Indianapolis Urban League. They're serving as our co-chairs. We're also working with organizations like CICF, Downtown Indy, Employee Indy, the Indiana Latina Expo, the Indianapolis Public Library, and then we have some tactical-based subcommittees like that are arts and culture-based, community institutions, education, faith, and media, and then the population-based subcommittees to kind of focus on those harder-to-count populations. So that's the African-American community. That's the Latino community. It's the Burmese population that we have in Indianapolis, any low-income populations, and then also renters. So,
Jill, there's a lot of effort to reach out to some of these communities. Why is it that people just don't want to participate that we know of? That's a big question, I know.
I think sometimes it starts with they don't even know that it's happening. So I think a lot of this is about making sure that people know it's happening. I think sometimes they don't trust that their data is going to be used only for the purposes that the Census Bureau says, and that data is very well protected by Title 13 in the United States Code. And then I think sometimes that we just don't know that certain populations are there. And you know, I think that Count Me Indy is a great example of a local complete count committee who's really trying to reach out to everybody in their community. And it's really exciting to see what they're doing.
Miriam, you're the president and CEO of La Plaza.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell our audience about that group and how you got involved in the census effort?
Oh, okay. Well, La Plaza serves the Hispanic community here in central Indiana. And we do that through programming for Latino youth in education to encourage post-secondary education, then access to health and social services for Latino families who are new to the city. We work day in, day out with the Latino community, know the challenges, and know how important the census is to our community. So when the mayor called and said, would I be a co-chair? I said, absolutely. We want to make sure that the Latino community is well represented in the census and that everyone is counted.
So what sorts of things have you done to sort of actively make sure that happened?
We have plastered our office with information about the census on all our social media sites. We talk to our families. We make sure we let families know that this is important, that it's safe, that it's easy to do, and that we're there to help in any way. But mostly with some of our families who are very fearful, given the anti-immigrant rhetoric and distrust of government and what have you. So our job is to make sure that we minimize those fears in our community, let them know how important this is, and get good information out and on-the-ground work. A group of folks we're working with are going to be doing a whole canvassing in the community to get out, literally go knock door to door and let families know that this is a safe, this is important, and that they should participate.
Jill, I think that's worth reiterating your point that you made earlier that this is protected information.
Mm-hmm.
There is no way that this can be used against people who participate.
Yes. In fact, it's a felony for census workers or other Census Bureau employees to disclose this data.
Mm. Tony, you're head of the Indianapolis Urban League.
Yes.
Can you describe what your group does and how you got involved in this as well?
Yes. So every day at the Urban League, we empower communities and change lives by working with students, young people, adults, and families with job training. Educational programs, Project Ready, where every year we're working with nearly 1,000 students to get them prepared for college or for, you know, post-secondary career opportunities. We also have a myriad of health and wellness initiatives that we're involved in, and then we also work very hard with community partners on advocacy. And so each year we are dealing with nearly 15,000 individuals, either through direct services, information distribution, or referrals. And so this work is crucial to us because 90% of our clients are African American, but we also recognize that almost 100% of them are facing a lot of hardships and challenges. And so the census is important because being counted is crucial for federal funding for the various programs and services that many of the individuals that we help every day need or require in order to move towards self-sufficiency.
Miriam, let's go back to the fear. What do you tell some of those families who are afraid of, I guess being on a list or something like that?
think families and some of our people in our community who may not have documents or fearful that that information may be used against them. So making sure they understand that this is completely confidential, cannot be shared for 72 years, and that this is very important. As Tony said, that this brings back resources to the community that are important to our families. And so it's really helping them understand that their fear, while certainly we appreciate it and recognize it, they need not be fearful of completing the census. So.
Andrea, what are some of the biggest challenges that Indianapolis and Indiana face when we're trying to get people aware of the census and being involved with it?
Yeah, I would say we were all talking earlier. The citizenship question was overruled by the Supreme Court. So it's not on the census, but just talking about it and the possibility of it. Now we're kind of, you know, letting people know that's not going to be a question on the census. But that did bring up a lot of kind of fear and, you know, distrust in the government and what are you really going to be using this data for? So that was kind of, I mean, that was a victory for a fair and inclusive count, but it also, too, is a little bit confusing because it's not going to be on there, but people may still think it will be on there. So we, in 2010, kind of that data, we're kind of looking at the neighborhoods that maybe didn't have the highest self-response rate. So we're looking at those communities and those community institutions and churches and outreach groups that kind of can help us reach people on the ground level. So we teamed up with Luna Language Services to get our outreach materials translated into the top four or five languages in Indianapolis, which that's Spanish, French, Burmese, Hokkien, and we're working on Arabic right now. So just making sure that all of our materials can be read by everyone in the community, too.
Jill, I think the citizenship question is one. Obviously, it's been in the news a lot. And as she said, the Supreme Court had it removed. Were it on there, I mean, just as every other question, that data would be protected. People would be protected were they to place that data on the blanks, I suppose.
Yes, it would have been protected.
And so, Miriam, do you think that question would have really greatly affected the outcome of participation?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think if the question had been kept in there, had been placed in there, I should say, that would have had a real deleterious effect on folks coming out. There was given the anti-immigrant rhetoric that's going around, unfortunately, that fed into that fear, and folks were very reluctant. And although we talk about confidentiality and what may happen when you're living in fear, when you're worried about deportation or other things, that is very hard to mitigate that.
From your perspective, do you think that question was there to alter the numbers in any sort of untruthful way? Or do you think it was just simply part of this administration's agenda to get an accurate count of that?
I can't speak for the administration, what they tried to do. I can tell you that for many in our community, it was felt that was placed in there to suppress participation. And so I think that's the way the community took it, that this was purposely attempted to be put in there to suppress an undercount in the community.
Tony, same question for you.
Well, and I really wanted to piggyback on that. We also serve as a center for working families. And what I can tell you is that we're required to provide a lot of data to our funders and supporters about our impact on our clients. And so just even under normal circumstances, it's a challenge getting detailed information. And so for some, they may view this as quite invasive, but our goal collectively is to make sure that people are aware of how critically important it is that they complete the process. We deal with a lot of clients, some that have a high mobility rate. They're very transient. And so we know that can be a challenge for us as well in terms of our ability to reach people. And so canvassing efforts, particularly door-to-door efforts, and making sure that we all meet the clients and students where they're at, whether it's in schools or whether it's on site at our respective facilities, is going to be an important part of this.
A few years ago, the U.S. Census Bureau released a report on what the Bureau itself calls the longstanding undercount of young children in censuses. The report says And this is a quote: after the 2010 census, demographic analysis estimated net undercounts of about 4.6% for young children. This is ages 0 to 4. And this translated to a net undercount of almost 1 million young children. Jill, how serious is that problem?
I think it's serious, although my friend Miriam reminded me that she looked at a report earlier today that Indiana actually did a pretty good job in the 2010 census.
Actually, with Latino kids, they actually over-reported, but in other states it is a problem, but not apparently in Indiana. So
a couple of things. Our Commission on Improving the Status of Children in Indiana is actively engaged with trying to reach out to the various providers and organizations that work with children. The Census Bureau also is very focused on this. They have a couple of different, they have women and children and then children 0 to 5. And I think what happens is you've got a couple different things. I think sometimes you have women with small children who maybe are living someplace that is not, they may be living with a family member or something like that. Somebody gets that, the homeowner gets the invitation, they answer it for, and they forget about, oh yeah, this person is staying here with, this child. And so they don't answer that question. Or they miss getting counted in that way. I think sometimes you've got kids who have divorced parents, and so each parent thinks the other one may be counted, and they didn't quite get that done. So we are actively asking people to help us with that. I know I just met last week with McCoy, the Marion County Commission on Youth, and I know this is something that they're working on, and I know they're definitely engaged with Count Me Indy in that regard too.
And the report also showed that white children were more likely to be counted than Black and Native American children of the same age. Miriam, you mentioned the Hispanic population and that being sort of overrepresented, would you say?
Yeah.
I suppose some numbers may suggest. But do we know what causes that, white children to participate more than, say, Black and Native American children, as the data suggests?
I think it is kind of what we've been talking about here, where you have the traditionally undercounted populations would include African Americans, Native Americans, where, those communities maybe haven't all together haven't counted or haven't responded as much. And so then that follows that their children are not getting reported as much, maybe.
And there's also some confusion in our families, not understanding that we want to count everyone in the family. Yeah. So they assume it's just for the adults and not for the kids.
Tony, is that representative of the populations that you serve as well?
Yes, that very much is the case. And before this interview, we were just literally talking outside about the fact that in some instances, many of our families and households will take in relatives, friends, not recognizing or understanding that you need to count them as a part of your household, as a part of the census.
Jill, are people who are taking the census perhaps thinking that this is an every 10 years thing, and so they want to think about how what their life looks like over the next 10 years, and maybe they think, okay, well, I hope this person isn't in my house 10 years from now or something like that. It's not about the 10-year span. It's about right now.
Right. It's a snapshot. And Census Day is actually April 1st. So the idea is who lives here on April 1st. And I've had it described to me, where do you breathe the air? Where do you flush the toilet on April 1st? Your normal place of abode. And so if you happen to be on vacation on April 1st, then that, you don't live in the Hampton Inn maybe and, you know, someplace else. But where do you live on April 1st? And so if those children or those other people are with you and are going to, that's where they normally are for that period of time, that is what you should be reporting. So that's a great point. We'd encourage everybody to really take that to heart.
And take note on that. We are talking with Jill Carnell, Executive Director of the State Complete Count Committee, Andrea Watts, Chief Communications Officer for the Indianapolis Department of Metropolitan Development, Miriam Acevedo-Davis, President and CEO of La Plaza, and Tony Mason, President and CEO of the Indianapolis Urban League, about the 2020 census. And again, Census Day is April the 1st. If you have a voicemail, if you have a comment or a question to leave, you can do it via voicemail at 866-476-3881. You can find us on Facebook or Twitter at All in Indiana as well. And of course, the census happens every 10 years. Technology has advanced a lot in the last couple of decades. I imagine this has an effect on the process. Is it making things easier or harder in a lot of ways, Jill?
Well, I think from the technicals, the kind of technical stuff that we've been doing at the state with the update of local addresses and that sort of thing, kind of the backbone of the census, it makes it easier. I think that there is some concern and some fear that we have communities of people who don't have access to, you know, internet and that sort of thing all the time. And I think that there's some fear about that. We are trying to address that at the state by working with our state library and through the state library network to all 240 library systems within Indiana. Our state data center is at the state library. And for well over a year, we've been out. And by we, I mean Katie Springer at the state library has been out really trying to connect that message to librarians. So our hope is if you are in an area of Indiana that doesn't, you know, isn't highly connected, that you would be able to get to your library and get help there. Also, you know, the postcard should come to you, your home, and there is an 800 number that you'll be able to call. So our hope is that people would have access to a telephone if they don't have access to, you know, or don't feel comfortable with the internet.
And does the technology mean that the data comes back faster than it has in years past?
That is a great question for the Census Bureau.
We are talking about the United States Census, which, of course, takes place every 10 years. It is a census year. And after the break, we're going to dig deeper into some of those details about the census. We are, of course, joined by Jill Carnell, Executive Director of the State Complete Count Committee, Andrea Watts from the City of Indianapolis, Miriam Acevedo Davis from La Plaza, and Tony Mason from the Indianapolis Urban League. Of course, again, we would love to hear your questions and comments, and we'll have a few when we come back. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at All in Indiana, or just leave us a short voicemail with your name and where you're calling from at 866-476-3881. That's 866-476-3881. I'm Matt Pelser. We're back in 2 minutes. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Back now to our discussion on the 2020 census. We're joined again by Jill Carnell, Executive Director of the State Complete Count Committee. We have Andrea Watts from the City of Indianapolis, Miriam Acevedo Davis from La Plaza, and Tony Mason from the Indianapolis Urban League. We would love to hear your questions and comments. Just find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or leave a short voicemail with your name and where you're calling from at 866-476-3881. Kyle on Twitter says, after Pearl Harbor, U.S. Census Bureau info was used to locate, identify, and detain Japanese citizens in internment camps. In the Trump era, he goes on to say, with such hostile policies toward immigrants, why should vulnerable groups like Muslims and undocumented immigrants trust this process? Jill, I know that you probably don't want to be addressed right now, but I gotta ask you that question. Again, this is protected data. And what was different about that time?
I don't know how to answer that question exactly. And I, you know, again, I'm here on behalf of the state of Indiana, so we are not actually collecting this data. We're just, you know, amplifying the message of the Census Bureau. I would just tell you that every time we've brought this up with the Census Bureau, they've been very specific about the data is protected. And I know even I have not gone through this process, but some of our partners at the IU Kelly School of Business who are working on, you know, the data for some of the things we've been talking about with the local update of census addresses and stuff. They go through a very vigorous process. They basically sign, you know, that they understand that bad things can happen to them if they, you know, give away any of this data or give access to the data or do anything, you know, improperly with the data. So I think that that's a question that's best addressed to the Census Bureau. But from my perspective, all I can tell you is we've been assured again and again that, you know, the duty is to count all the people, and that is what the Census Bureau is trying to do.
Miriam, when you hear something like that, is it frustrating to you to hear something like that that may stoke fear in the populations you're trying to serve?
Sure. I mean, that would create some doubt, but we want to reassure folks that there are protections in place, that the information cannot be disclosed for over 72 years, and there are severe penalties for breach of confidentiality. But can certainly understand where, for some folks, that would still be very frightening.
Andrea, how much are we missing if one person, just one person, is not counted?
Yeah, I think it's important to put this into perspective. So it's $675 billion that's distributed annually to state and local government-based organizations on census data. So if we miss one person, it's a potential, they've estimated $20,000 to $30,000 of federal funding. So that's over a 10-year span, but that's just a big chunk of money. And Jill was making a great point earlier, like, we're paying those federal taxes. We're sending that money to D.C. What we should definitely want to get it back and put that, you know, to get our fair part of the pie.
Tony, what about when you hear something like that and then you think about the number of people who are not participating for one reason or another? Some reasons I think are fair. And you think about all the money that we might be missing out on. How much does that motivate you?
Well, it motivates our organization greatly. We're partnering with the National Urban League as well on a census-related effort. And in particular, our Young Professionals Auxiliary, the Exchange of the Urban League, is taking on a major role in that effort. And we're a part of the African American Coalition of Indianapolis, which is about 15 community organizations. And we've all committed to playing a major role in getting the word out and mobilizing participation in the effort. The numbers are crucial because when you think about education, you're talking about Title I dollars that schools need, federal Pell Grants. Look, I had a Pell Grant when I went to college, so I mean, I think most of us may have. Head Start funds, national school lunch programs. We're talking about our babies, our kids, and things that are going to be crucial for them. You're talking about housing, health care, transportation, emergency services. Small business development, community block grant development programs. All of these resources are needed by our community in order to continue to make Indianapolis a better place for all to live. And so that's why participation is so important.
What, I guess, is your elevator speech to people? I mean, I think that was pretty good right there when it comes to, like, explaining to people why this is so important. I mean, do you find that that is a challenge among for some people to I guess, absorb or to act on, perhaps?
You know, that may be the case for some, but that's not the case for all. As Miriam shared earlier, you know, 10 years ago, our state, we did pretty well with the census. And so, again, I think we just have to continue to educate people on why it's important. Mm. And sometimes that means going a layer deeper and explaining how it affects people, whether we're talking about some of the very programs that I mentioned earlier, or if you're talking about Medicare, SNAP, WIC. That resonates with people, particularly if they're coming from a household that benefits from those programs.
What are you hopeful for? What are you hopeful that this data can provide, perhaps in terms of federal funding and things like that?
Well, we hope that we have a true, real count because we believe that it will lead to additional resources that are needed by people all across Indianapolis and all across our state, for that matter, vital programs and resources, because right now, there is this notion that the economy is greater and better than it's ever been and everybody's working. But every day, struggling families come through our doors in need of assistance. And so this is one of the ways that we're able to augment what we do as a community organization. And, of course, it's what we're all doing around this table is we help people each and every day. But we need the federal funds and state funds in order to do that.
We got a voicemail from a listener named Maggie, and you can send us a voicemail as well at 866-476-3881. Maggie asks about participating as an enumerator. Let's listen to that now.
Hi, my name is Maggie O'Hara, and I was an enumerator in the past two censuses, 2000 and 2010. And for this year's census, I've also applied and been accepted for a position as an enumerator. My question is, this year there is an 11-day orientation period for enumerators, and it's paid, but it's 11 business days, 8:30 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. for training. And my first thought when I heard that was, how can they expect anyone who has a regular job to be able to take off 11 days from work in order to be able to go train for this temporary position that's expected to last 8 weeks long? And that, for me, has been the roadblock. And unfortunately, I may not be able to do my civic duty this time around. because I would lose my regular job that I've had for 5 years if I were to take off 11 days for this. So I'm wondering if there's a workaround, if there's a secondary option available, or if this is just for some reason much more comprehensive training than was required in the past when it was 3 days long. Thank you very much for your time.
Jill, Maggie makes a good point. 11 full days is a big commitment.
Yeah, I want to say, first of all, thank you, Maggie, for calling and sharing that with us. That was not something that I was aware of. And I don't know why the change, but I would be happy if we can get her contact information. I can get her connected with somebody here in Indiana from the Federal Census Bureau to get that question answered, because I don't know the answer to that question.
Do you know what things might have been like 10 years ago? Was it any different, or do we know just as much about that?
I was not in this role 10 years ago. I would presume I know that my interactions with the Bureau, there are a lot of concerns, that same concerns that we've been talking about, you know, like, are people trusting that we're going to do the right thing with the data, you know, that sort of thing. So it could have something to do with that. But that is just me completely, totally speculation, because I don't know.
We're talking about the 2020 census. Census Day is April the 1st. We're with Jill Carnell, Executive Director of the State Complete Count Committee, Andrea Watts, the Chief Communications Officer for Indianapolis Department of Metropolitan Development. Miriam Acevedo Davis is also with us. She's the President and CEO of La Plaza. And Tony Mason is the President and CEO of the Indianapolis Urban League. We have another listener voicemail. This one is from Dennis in Indianapolis about where his kids fall in the census.
Hi, this is Dennis calling from Indianapolis, WFYI area. I have a family of five, and our three grown daughters are living in different parts of the world at the moment, but two of them are students, and one's out of the country. I expect her to be back this summer, and the other is in Washington, D.C. at the moment, but she's a college student. So would I count them as my household people, either of them? Thank you.
Jill, what's the answer to that?
The answer, as I understand it from the Federal Census Bureau, is if a college student is living somewhere where they sleep most of the year, then they should be counted where that is. So, for instance, the D.C. question, if that's where the student is most of the time, then she should answer her census there at Washington, D.C. The one who is studying abroad, I think that's a little bit different, because it sounds like that student will be coming home and she's just happens to be away right now. So I think that they should count that student back at the household. It sounded like there was one more adult daughter. He didn't mention exactly where she was, but if she's made her residence someplace else, then that's where she should be counted.
So she should be the one participating in that.
Yes.
So what is then the if you're head of household, you fill out the information? But is it under 18 that should be spoken for? Or when you're over 18, if you're elsewhere, you participate on your own?
So it's not so much under 18. It's do you live in the household or not? So in that situation, as I understood it from the voicemail, the one daughter is a student, is in Washington, D.C. most of the year. And so that student would be counted in D.C.
So there's something, I'm reading my notes right now, called group quarters. So that's our homeless neighbors, that's students in dorm rooms, that's seniors in nursing homes, people in prisons, et cetera. So the U.S. Census Bureau counts these people too, but under a separate operation. So anytime that's sort of how they do that.
Yeah, but in that situation, the dorm person or the whoever's in charge of the group quarters should get that contact information, but then they should be asking who's living here at this time. I don't think it's a bad idea to have these conversations with your family, you know, like, let's make sure everybody is getting counted where they're supposed to be.
Mm-hmm. And if you want to find answers for these kinds of questions, is there like an FAQ that people can check out?
Yeah, I would invite them to go to our Indiana Census website, census.indiana.edu, and it links to other questions at the Census Bureau's website as well. We have some FAQs, and then I'm sure Count Me Indy has their own website.
Yep, it's just countmeindy.com.
And Count Me Indy, Andrea, has undertaken a lot of, I guess, creative is the right word to say, methods for, I guess, outreach when it comes to the 2020 census. What are some examples?
Yeah, so I'm actually on the air today taking Callie Kennington's place, and she really is the creative brains behind our exciting artistic partnerships and how approachable our logo is. It doesn't look like something that came from the government, you know? So it's kind of, it's pretty fun. So
can you describe it? I know this is radio.
Yeah, no, you're fine. It's kind of colorful and playful. And then we've teamed up with the Arts Council to engage with local artists to have big posters made. And we had some T-shirts made and different things. We even have a coloring book that kind of explains to kids, like, why is the census important? And we've been tabling at different events. Like this past summer, we had something called the Woof Count. And it was kind of like, these are the kinds of questions that will be on the census. And it's talking about your dogs. So just fun, engaging ways. The census doesn't have to be scary. It doesn't have to be intimidating. So we're trying to, like, bring down those barriers. The U.S. Census Bureau, like our regional representatives in Chicago, have been engaging with Callie to come speak at the different conferences. And she was invited to Harvard to speak about the innovative approaches that we're taking to the census.
We have another listener voicemail from Chris asking about how people can help with the census if they can't go door to door.
My name is Chris. I am calling from Anderson, Indiana, and I'm wondering about people who are either disabled or elderly who are able to use computer, able to help with the census, would like a little extra part-time job, but can't go door-to-door. What are the options? Thank you.
Jill, if you can just sit at a desk with a keyboard, what can you do to help?
Yeah, I think that there are positions available in the there are 4 regional offices in Indiana for the census, Lake County, Indianapolis, Fort Wayne, and Evansville. And so if you go to the Census Bureau's website, which I believe is 2020census.gov, and there are some links, I think, to local jobs. And the other thing is, if somebody wants to reach out to me, they can find my contact information through that census.indiana.edu website, and I'd be happy to connect anybody that would like to be connected.
We're also hiring at the city complete count ambassador position. So if you go to the CountMeIndy website, there's a little section that says we're hiring. We obviously would love to have people that are bilingual, but that's not a requirement. We have positions as well.
Miriam, do you think that making it fun, like what Andrea is talking about, will help things out a lot?
Oh, absolutely. We've seen it at our office and through our social media sites and stuff. The more friendly you could make it, the more inviting, the more we see people relaxing around it and having confidence in it. So absolutely, we've taken advantage of many of the things that Census 2020 has put out, and count me in.
And Andrea, are you meeting people where they are, or do they have to kind of come to you in a way, I guess, figuratively or literally?
I would say we're meeting people where we are. We're going to festivals. We're tabling at different job fairs. We are engaging with the congressman's office at different events he'll be at. We're getting the mayor at those events. We are trying to get where people are and give different presentations to neighborhood groups and make people feel like, you know, this is important and you want to buy into this. So, yeah.
Tony, what do you think would be, I guess let's give Andrea some ideas. What do you think would be meaningful ways to engage the populations that you serve?
Well, I have to tell you, they're actually doing a great job of that in terms of engaging community organizations that serve our population. We also are leveraging a partnership with Radio 1 Indianapolis and the Indianapolis Recorder as media outlets to help get the word out. And of course, it's going to take a collective effort across the community in order to fully engage as many people to participate in the census as possible. I know that last summer when we hosted the National Urban League Conference here, the Census Bureau played a major role and had a substantial presentation during the week, which, as you know, we had 9 presidential primary candidates here and who knows how many celebrities. But for us, the most important session that entire week, perhaps outside of hearing those candidates speak, was the forum that was around the census. And so we're all going to be leveraging our respective fundraiser events and general program outreach efforts in order to get the word out.
Tony Mason is the president and CEO of the Indianapolis Urban League. We really appreciate your time today, sir.
Thank you.
Jill Carnell, executive director of the State Complete Count Committee, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Andrea Watts, Chief Communications Officer for the Indianapolis Department of Metropolitan Development. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
Miriam Acevedo-Davis, President and CEO of La Plaza. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Our producers are Drew Dodlin and Maggie Galon. Scott Cameron's our managing editor. Our show is engineered by Adam Gross. Our podcast will be up this afternoon, wherever you get podcasts. Tomorrow, we'll have a conversation about financial infidelity and all the complicated things that can happen when you combine relationships and money. Until then, we're on Twitter and Facebook at All In Indiana. I'm Matt Pelser. Thanks for listening. This is All In.